Mike Dempsey. Look, I hear from people all the time who are having tax problems, but don't be afraid of the IRS. Right now, you can talk or meet with local professionals that are here to help your specific tax issues. Accelerate your tax solution with Accelerated Tax Solutions.
The sports world keeps spinning, and the local conversation continues. Now, Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
And a very good Friday evening to you, Jacksonville. It is Hacker After Dark, 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Friday night leading into 4th of July weekend. You kidding me? Of course we're here. We're not mailing it in. Denmark and I are going to give you two solid hours of sports talk heading into a holiday weekend. Of course, most of you, including us right here at 1010XL, will have Monday off. Hope you have a terrific 4th of July. Before we get there, we got a lot to get into for the next couple of hours. Tonight, the guest lineup looks like this. It's a good one, too. We got a little bit of everything tonight. Vinny Iyer of the Sporting News. He's covered the NFL for many, many years. He's actually now big fantasy football host on the Locked On Podcast Network. We'll talk to Vinny Iyer not only about the Jacksonville Jaguars, his thoughts on the Jaguars and what they did this offseason, but a little fantasy talk, right? What about Trevor Lawrence this year in fantasy football? Where does a guy like Christian Kirk, Travis Etienne, maybe a Marvin Jones, maybe an Evan Ingram, where do these guys factor in with fantasy drafts that'll be starting up here probably, what, in the next 6 weeks or so? So we'll do a little Jaguar talk on the field and a little Jaguar fantasy talk as well with Vinny Iyer. That is coming up in less than 20 minutes. One of my favorite interviews that I've done in a while, I got to be honest. I had the opportunity earlier this week to catch up with a man that competed many times at the Nathan's Famous hot dog eating contest up there at Coney Island. We all know on July 4th, ESPN, high noon, they're going to be stuffing their face with Nathan's Famous hot dogs. Of course, that is Joey Chestnut's world. Everybody is living in it. But we have a guy right here on the First Coast that did that for like 5 or 6 years, competed on that circuit, was a competitor in the Nathan's Famous hot dog eating contest. Hall Hunt Jr. will join us. I want to talk to Hall not just about the contest, kind of what happens leading up to the contest, maybe more interestingly, what happens after the cameras go to black and the contest is over and you have an excess of 40 hot dogs in your gut. So it'll be a very interesting conversation, I'm sure. I think you guys will enjoy it. That is coming up later on in the 8 o'clock hour. In the 9 o'clock hour, my friend Daryl Sutherland, the head football coach at Bartram Trail High School, one of the best public school programs, really not only in Northeast Florida, but you could argue statewide. They win football games out there at Bartram Trail. It's what they do. Of course, they were in the news this week as their four-star cornerback, Sharif Denson, committed to the University of Florida. So we'll talk with head coach Daryl Sutherland about Sharif Denson. We'll talk to him about the change in the landscape of high school football. Of course, they're in St. John's County. They no longer play Duval County schools and district games, that whole metron suburban thing. So we'll talk to Daryl Sutherland coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. And finally, we'll wrap up our NFC West preview by going to check in on the world champions. We've already been to Arizona. We've been to Seattle. Last night, we were in San Francisco. Tonight, we will end in Los Angeles talking about the Rams with Stu Jackson, staff writer for therams.com. Aaron Donald, gigantic contract this offseason. Cooper Kupp, gigantic contract this offseason. They bring in Allen Robinson. They did have some losses, right? Von Miller is gone, and Darius Williams, one of their corners, is now here in Jacksonville. We'll talk about all that with Stu Jackson coming up in just a little bit. Every night here on Hacker After Dark, we kick it off with the big deal of the night. In Dillon, Denmark, let's do that right now.
Time now for the big deal of the night.
What's the big deal?
What is the big deal?
No big deal.
It is a big deal.
On Hacker After Dark.
The big deal of the night tonight is very similar to where we were 24 hours ago. The repercussions of what happened yesterday in the world of sports pretty much extended into today. It was right about this time yesterday that reality was sinking in, that Southern Cal and UCLA were moving to the Pac, or moving from the Pac-12 to the Big Ten. That is now official. They will start playing in the Big Ten in the year 2024. The Pac-12 now is scrambling, much like the Big 12 did a year ago when they lost Texas and Oklahoma. Now, what the Big 12 did was they brought in arguably the best group, a group of five teams they could, right? They bring in Cincinnati, and they brought in UCF, and they brought in, who was it, BYU, right? I mean, they brought in a lot of teams from the group of five to try to stabilize themselves there in the Big 12. Will it work? I don't know, but at least they're trying something. But what does that mean for the Pac-12? What does that mean for Washington and Oregon and Stanford and Arizona and Utah and all the teams that are left after USC and UCLA have bailed to the Big Ten? The one thing that I thought was interesting today, whether I believe Matt Hayes, I think, said it on our air on primetime, you had every ESPN analyst today talking college football basically said it, and I've heard it over and over and over today. This is not over. Moving from one conference to another, bombshell-type announcements, this is not over. So what does it mean? Where is the next big news coming from? Will it be a merger, if you will, between the Pac-12 and the Big 12? And who will survive that? Will the Pac-12 pick off Big 12 teams? I guess that would have to be the case, right? The Big 12 is pretty full now with the teams that they have coming in, including the likes of Cincinnati and UCF. What does it mean for two of the five group of fives? And very similar over here in the Atlantic Coast Conference. I mean, are we going to wake up one day and Florida State and Clemson, North Carolina, Miami, all of a sudden are going to be in the Big Ten or the Southeastern Conference? Where is it going to end? The SEC is set to have 16 teams beginning in 2025. I believe the Big Ten now will be at 16 teams beginning in 2024. You want to talk about the two giants of college football. What conference is better right now? If you were to go top, actually, you know what, top to bottom, and again, we're in Jacksonville, Florida, so I think most of us are going to be a little biased here. But if you take the top five schools in each conference, Ohio State, Southern Cal, Michigan, Penn State, it's pretty good. I don't think it's Alabama, Texas, Georgia, LSU, Florida. I haven't even gotten to Auburn and Oklahoma yet. But certainly the Big Ten is pretty good. But what does that mean? When's the next domino going to fall? Is it Clemson? Is it Florida State? And is this just a college football thing? If you want to look at basketball, you think Duke holds any weight there? North Carolina holds any weight there? Kansas, for that matter. Told you last night there were rumors in the Midwest that Kansas might one day go independent in football, get out of all this nonsense, and join the Big Ten for basketball only. So many questions yet to be answered. But there is good news today. And it's kind of what I alluded to last night. We have spent 5.5 months talking about transfer portals, talking about name, image, and likeness, talking about collectives, talking about the recruiting trail, talking about everything that happens not on a football field. Today is July 1st. Do you realize, whether you're talking about college football or the National Football League, that this is the last month we will go without football until March of 2023. Take that into 4th of July weekend. We are into the final stretch. There is college football next month. At the end of August is when the season starts. And at that point, then maybe we can start looking at what we all love, what we all enjoy. And look, I'll be honest with you. I'll take you behind the curtain a little bit. When I was doing shows with Matt and Joe and Leon on primetime, and we were talking about NIL, and we were talking about this, that, and the other, about probably 9 months ago, 6 to 9 months ago, it was just words, man. I honestly didn't really give it that much thought. I thought the players deserved to be paid, but I was far more interested in what was going on the field. And I believe fans were far more interested. I don't know how many people cared 6 to 9 months ago about name, image, and likeness. I'm being 100% truthful with you. And I told them as such. But as we've gotten further along, and as you see thousands, if not million-dollar deals being reported for this NIL, it's gotten my interest, but in a negative way. To me, this is not what the NIL was designed to do. They have taken it, they meaning many, many, many college programs. They have taken it, maybe manipulated it a little bit, molded it into what it is now. And what it is now is ridiculous. And I don't know how you get out of it. I don't know how you can calm the waters. I don't know how you can tell people they can't continue making what they're making. I don't know. What I do know is I'm very excited games are actually going to be played beginning next month, and that maybe we won't have to hear about NIL at least for the next 3 to 4 months during the season. A season that looks very interesting. We've talked a lot about Florida State, Miami, Florida. Gator fans, we had Ben Troop on last night. Florida State fans, we had Casey Weldon on last night. Miami fans, we had Brett Romberg on a couple weeks ago. A lot of expectations for those three schools, no question about it. The other big story that won't go away is the NBA offseason. You know, I remember back in the days when I first started watching the NBA, it was right around the Jordan title runs beginning in 1991 when they beat Magic Johnson and the Lakers in five, and then they beat Portland, and then they beat Phoenix. You could rest assured that NBA teams were building dynasties, right? That you were not going to have one-year runs. But I look at all the movement in the NBA just in the last 24-plus hours. And by the way, all the 1 and 2 year deals being signed all over the place. And somewhere along the line, the NBA came a 1 year league. Every year is 1 year. And after the season ends, hysteria between superstars wanting out, superstars demanding trades. I honestly don't know if we'll ever see a situation like we had in the 80s and the 90s. Where Larry Bird stays with the Boston Celtics forever. Magic Johnson stays with the Lakers. Reggie Miller stays with Indiana. John Stockton stays with Utah. Dirk Nowitzki, maybe he was the last one. When Dirk called it a career, is he going to be the last guy that spends 15-plus years in the same city? Although you think about it, Karl Malone at the end went and ring chasing, right, from Utah to the Lakers. People forget Hakeem Olajuwon ended in Toronto. What a situation that was. Patrick Ewing went to Seattle and Orlando at the end of his career. So guys do go ring chasing, but that was chasing rings when you're 38, 39, 40 years old. You got superstars now in their mid to late 20s and early 30s that aren't chasing rings, that maybe aren't even chasing money. They can make a boatload of cash anywhere they are. But if they're not happy in a certain situation, they're getting out of there. And you're seeing it again with Kevin Durant. Just like you saw it with James Harden, just like you've seen it with LeBron. It's fascinating what the NBA has turned into. I still love it. I am a diehard NBA fan, but there was something pure about Dirk Nowitzki and the Dallas Mavericks, about Magic Johnson and the Lakers, about Reggie Miller in Indiana. That's who they were. That's who they are. That's how they'll be remembered. Kobe Bryant and the Lakers is another one. You just get the sense that we are going to get further and further removed from that as the years go on. A lot of movement in the NBA. I got a buddy of mine, my buddy Drew, maybe the only Minnesota Timberwolves fan in Jacksonville. You see what they did today? They traded for Rudy Gobert from Utah. Remember him? The guy that started the sports COVID situation? Anyway, not to break this down, but basically Minnesota gave up 4 first-round picks and 4 players for Rudy Gobert. One of the worst trades I've ever seen in my life. And I was happy to send a paragraph-long text message to my buddy and tell him what an awful trade that was. Again, I'm not going to sit here and break down the Rudy Gobert trade for the good folks of Jacksonville. Just know it's a horrible deal for Minnesota. But that's where we are in the NBA. You're so desperate to win. You're so desperate to compete that you will do ridiculous things, trade away your future to try to win now, which goes back to the whole thought that it is a one-year league and you very rarely now can plan for the future. 641-1010 is the phone number. If you want to get involved, that's also the text line designed by Lifetime Enclosures. Vinny Iyer has been covering the NFL for many years from the Sporting News. He's also now big into the fantasy football game. We're going to talk Jaguars coming into 2022. I also want to talk Jaguars when it comes to fantasy football. Travis Etienne, Marvin Jones, Christian Kirk, Trevor Lawrence, my sleepers, Evan Ingram. What is the thought on these guys in the fantasy world? That's next. Hacker After Dark on a Friday, leading in to 4th of July weekend, Jacksonville. We're glad you're with us.
Hacker After Dark on 1010XL. Now.
Hello.
Another great guest on the Farrah and Farrah phone line. Brought to you by the accident attorneys at Farrah and Farrah.
Back here on 1010XL at 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville. We are glad you are with us. The end of June, the beginning of July. Hard to believe. This is where we are. The Jaguars will be in training camp in about 3.5 weeks. And, of course, are on the field for the Hall of Fame game in just over a month. They're on the fourth day of August. Let's talk about the National Football League. Let's look back on the Jaguars offseason with Vinny Iyer of the Sporting News, been covering the NFL for many, many years. He's also the Locked On host for fantasy football on the Locked On Network. Vinny, how you doing?
Doing well, Ryan. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Vinny, always appreciate the time, man. It's been a while since you and I chatted. Boy, what an offseason here in Jacksonville, from the Urban Meyer fiasco and that ending back in early December to the hiring of Doug Peterson. Let's start there, Vinny. How night and day do you think it is between Urban Meyer and Doug Peterson now being here in Jacksonville?
Well, I think it tends to happen when a team goes radical and makes an aggressive move and it backfires, they go back to something more comfortable. And Doug Peterson had many years of success with the Eagles, winning a Super Bowl, and he knows how to coach in this league at a high level with his resume. And he's also organized with an offense and a vision that can work in this league. So that's what the Jaguars did. Maybe they just had their eyes too big there and Urban Meyer and seeing what the upside might have been, but there was also a downside, and they crashed pretty hard with that. So now they're trying to settle things. It's just trying to get everything organized, to get a legitimate structure in place where there's a feeling of respect between the players and coaches and all that. So that is a big step already in the right direction, just having the professionalism of Peterson and the staff there. But now the next level is, okay, you had Trevor Lawrence. You put him through this tough rookie year with his head coach and different style of offense. Now you got to focus on getting him right. They got aggressive to get some players for him, but now you got to have that plan in place with Travis Etienne coming back. You invest money in Christian Kirk and Zay Jones. Time to see what Trevor Lawrence has really got here in year two.
Vinny, what's your opinion on Doug Peterson as far as we know he won the Super Bowl. We know with Carson Wentz, the development there. But it did not end well in Philadelphia. People maybe tend to forget that. What is your thought on Peterson's now his second head coaching gig here in Jacksonville? Who is Doug Peterson as a head coach?
Yeah, I think with him, you saw what happened. Part of it was losing some key members of the staff that were right there with him that were helping make those decisions, including Frank Reich. So I think Peterson, again, I mentioned the organization. I think that's one thing he does well. It's like has his staff together. But when he starts losing some guys and then there's pressure on him to make specific decisions related to scheme and personnel, I don't think that's his strength. I think he's a guy that leads and brings people together that way. But when he starts getting to the micromanaging part, that's an issue. And you definitely had that to some degree with Urban Meyer. So you're trying to turn the page from that. I think it's a fresh start. Sometimes it's good to have a year off for these coaches. You saw Mike McCarthy, it took a while, but once he came back and figured out the Cowboys, he was good to go. His best self, and we know things didn't end great in Green Bay with him either. So you got to take the good part of your coach when you hire him. And again, it's a fresh approach, different people around. And as long as you can make the personalities fit, I think they're going to have a good chance of turning around there.
Vinny Iyer of the Sporting News. You also get him on the Locked On Fantasy Podcast, part of the Locked On Network. He's always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL in Jacksonville. You mentioned the free agent spending. Not only on offense, people tend to forget here locally, they got the leading tackler in the NFL in Foye Oluokun. You bring in a big defensive tackle like Fadakasi from New York, Darius Williams with his Super Bowl ring in L.A. No question, Vinny, that Trent Baalke and the Jaguars spent a lot of money this offseason. I know they're better. I think that's relative, though. The question is, how much better have they gotten from the past couple of years?
Yeah, it takes a time for all those pieces to come together, especially when you're changing this philosophies here overall as a team. And that's a tough adjustment to make so quickly for a rather young roster. So I think it'll take time. There's got to be some patience. They're definitely going to clean up some things that were a real mess defensively last year. They'll be more respectable on that side of the ball, but it comes to, again, we know scoring, moving the ball, it's going to help your defense a lot. When you have some consistency and ability to put up points there on offense and make the other team chase, your defense is going to perform much better. So I think it's relative. I think it's worth spending if you've got the money as a younger team and you get free agents that they got where they have some upside. They're not on the older side. Some teams will spend on guys right around 30 or right after 30 and not get the return. So the Jaguars did at least think about that with some of the youthful players they got. So they just want to be more active, make a lot more plays, be more versatile. I think now I think they can be a threat, being aggressive, going downfield, rushing the passer, but also horizontally. Same thing with the offense. You get guys like Christian Kirk, Zay Jones, and now Travis Etienne, hopefully in the mix. You're going to have some more versatility there as well. So I think they're still in a figuring out period. I think this division could be in transition here rather soon with the Titans maybe fading a little bit, the Colts trying to still figure out quarterback. Is Matt Ryan more than 1 year solution? So Jaguars might be the prime position there in 2023, 2024 to take over this division with everyone else figuring things out.
Vinny, you've covered the NFL for many, many years with the Sporting News. So I'm curious your opinion. When teams look, there's a lot of young guys, as you mentioned, on this Jaguar roster. And quite frankly, all they know is losing, right? Losing, losing, losing every Sunday. Trust me, I do the post-game show. I know all about it as well. Losing has engrossed this organization. How hard will it be for Doug Peterson and his new staff to kind of change that mindset when all you know is losing? Will that be tough to get out of the young players' minds here in Jacksonville?
I think along with the losing, there's also that hunger that they want to get better. They want to be part of something special on the ground floor, realize that they have a generational talent if things can work around the quarterback well and Trevor Lawrence. So they've got the toughest part in place, right? To win games in the NFL, you've got to have that quarterback solution. And even if Lawrence struggles last year, you still feel he's the guy. I mean, you just look at his physical skill set, and that's why the Jaguars were so quick to make that move because they didn't want to blow this lifetime, once-in-a-lifetime talent that a lot of teams would love to have. So that's the thing, is you have that confidence, you've got some other playmakers that you're excited about. And I think it's just, again, making them believe in themselves that they can turn things around. Again, you have to also think about it in a way to be patient. I know teams are looking for the quick turnaround, but the Jaguars have some time on their side. The landscape is going to change in the division, as I said. So just stay with the program. Feel like you're released from an absolute mess that you had last year. Enjoy playing football again, number one.
Final moments here with Vinny Iyer of the Sporting News. Vinny, were you on board with Trevon Walker and Devin Lloyd going defense in round number one?
Yeah, I mean, they've done a lot for the front seven. You mentioned their two free agent acquisitions that they spent quite a bit on in the front seven as well, but they're trying to shore up the things. They don't want to be embarrassment against the run. You got to shore up the run if you're going to be able to rush the passer. So you got guys in Lloyd and Luakon that are going to be kind of active there on the back end. You hope to control the middle of the field a little bit better. And then you got Trayvon Walker, who gives you some versatility in the pass rush. So that's the name of the game, is you got to be able to stop the run to set up those pass rushers, because otherwise teams are just going to run on you all the time. So you got to address those things at the same time. Just get active, fast, being able to handle the passing game better, because we know cover linebackers, and you look at the Buccaneers as a good example. They had the beefy guys in the middle, have the cover linebackers, but also guys that can get to you from the edge. And I think there's definitely that blueprint with the Bucs' influence on this defense going forward.
Yeah, no question about that. Mike Caldwell, who was on that Tampa staff last year, now the defensive coordinator here in Jacksonville. Vinny, to me, it was one of the craziest NFL off seasons I can ever remember. I mean, there was a stretch there where all pros, if not future Hall of Famers, were switching teams every day. I mean, it was insane. What was in your mind, now that we've had a couple of months to kind of decompress, maybe the one or two biggest moves of the offseason that are going to mean the most here in 2022?
Well, I think you have to start with Russell Wilson, and just going over to Denver, it gives them a legitimate quarterback there to match that division, where you have Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert, and Derek Carr established there. So gives Broncos a chance to be way more competitive now that they're their quarterback solution, the first that they've had probably since Peyton Manning still had some good years left there from him coming from the Colts. So yeah, that was pretty big. Deshaun Watson, if he was able to stay on the field for the Browns, I think that would have been pretty massive as well, because you've transformed this team that seemed to be a high upside quarterback away from really turning the corner and maybe matching what the Bengals did last year. So those are the two biggest there. And then you look at the two wide receivers that moved. Shocking that Tyreek Hill left Kansas City, but figure the Dolphins are more excited and hopeful for Tua Tagovailoa to turn around with him. And then reuniting Davante Adams with Derek Carr, I think that could also be a special connection that you look for. So blockbuster offensive players moved, but don't sleep on some other minor moves. That talk about Matt Ryan ending up there in Indianapolis. I mean, that could stabilize that team rather well here and help them be successful. So there are a lot of moves on different levels. The quarterback carousel continues. Teams just trying to find answers. So the Jaguars fans and the Jaguars players just have to be happy that you have a Trevor Lawrence going forward.
Vinny, I got to throw a fantasy question here with you at the end, but final thought on the NFL. Again, Vinny Iyer of the Sporting News. You also get him on the Locked On Podcast Network with the Locked On Fantasy Podcast. When it comes to the AFC, like I said, you've been doing this a while now. Have you ever seen the disparity on paper anyway at the quarterback position conference to conference? And look, you got Hall of Famers and Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers in the NFC, but my goodness, what the AFC has at the quarterback position, Vinny, to me, it's night and day between the two conferences.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous when you look at the top of fantasy football drafts, who's there. I mean, there's a good case for Josh Allen now, that offense, how he's locked in to be the number one pick. Yeah, Justin Herbert has thrown more TD passes than anyone else in his first two seasons. So, you know, he's got a high upside there, that offense with the Chargers in year two of that. Yeah, Patrick Mahomes, and Mahomes might be fighting to be the third pick behind those two guys. So that tells you a lot about that. And that's before getting into Lamar Jackson and what he can do, a sleeper guy that I like, could really turn around. As I mentioned, Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson's going to be mentioned in the same breath as him. He's got a lot of weapons. Tua should be improved here. Derek Carr is with his familiar guy. So there's a lot out there that's going to be appealing for fantasy football with these AFC QBs, but I would not be surprised again if those three, in some order, Mahomes, Allen, and Herbert are the guys at that position.
All right, Vinny, leave us with this. Jaguar-related fantasy questions. What are we thinking? You know, Christian Kirk, Trevor Lawrence, Travis Etienne. I think Evan Ingram potentially could be a really interesting sleeper for the Jaguars. I like that pick here, a prove-it one-year deal. What are we thinking as far as the Jaguar fantasy-related guys?
Yeah, in fantasy football, when a team has drastic changes, we pay attention closely in training camp, the preseason. So I think that's going to be in play here for sure with the Jaguars. So I think with them, you want to see how they use James Robinson and Travis Etienne. How do they use Evan Ingram and Dan Arnold? Where's Marvin Jones and Laviska Shenault? Are they going to fit at all in this mix with the new guys? So right now you feel the best about Christian Kirk, but the Jaguars have a lot of things we would need to see from their offense to feel confident to invest in their passing game much. But I think watch out for Travis Etienne. I think they're going to find a way to get him on the field in different ways, and it'd be rather effective. And James Robinson, that injury could open the door for Etienne coming back from his knee injury.
Vinny Iyer of the Sporting News, always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville. Vinny, thank you for the time, man. Really appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
All right. Thanks, Ryan. Have a good one.
There you go. Vinny Iyer of the Sporting News. And, yeah, I mean, if you're a fantasy football player, I'm telling you, Evan Ingram to me in this Doug Peterson offense, you probably get him in the mid to late rounds. I like him a lot. ETN's an unknown. I know a lot of fantasy football players like Travis Etienne, particularly if you're in one of those PPR leagues. Did Mark, you a fantasy football player? You into that at your age in life?
Yes, I am, and I've never won a championship, so I'd like to do that this year.
Are you a dynasty guy? Are you a one-year league guy? What's your story?
Mostly 1 year, but we started a dynasty league, is it last year or 2 years ago? And I like that, but I like the 1 year better.
I'm in a league that's crazy. I'm in a league that's a dynasty league, which if you don't know what that means, you carry over your players year after year. We also have individual defensive players. So every week we start three D linemen, four linebackers, four defensive backs. Yeah, it's a lot, but it's fun. No question about that. Again, thank you to Vinny Iyer of the Sporting News. Something else that is fun that I really enjoy, and that's 4th of July. Why do I enjoy the 4th of July? Well, a lot of reasons. It's our country's birthday. It's Independence Day, obviously. You know, you look at the fellowship that it's had, the fireworks, and the hot dog eating contest. Coney Island, the Nathan's Famous hot dog eating contest. Of course, we know Joey Chestnut. That is his world, and everybody has lived in it. Kobayashi before him. Let's talk to a guy that lives right here in our own backyard in Clay County that has participated many times in the Nathan's Famous hot dog eating contest, I think five times to be exact. His record was 40 hot dogs and buns in 10 minutes. Of course, that thing has been on ESPN for years. What is it like to be a contestant at the Nathan's Famous hot dog eating contest on the 4th of July? Well, let's ask Hall Hunt Jr., who did it many times. He's next on 1010XL and on 92.5 FM. It's Hacker After Dark on a Friday night, and we are certainly glad you are with us.
It's Friday, I heard that.
It's Hacker After Dark on 1010XL. Now.
Hello.
Another great guest on the Farrah and Farrah phone line, brought to you by the accident attorneys at Farrah and Farrah.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, it is a Friday leading in to 4th of July weekend, and we are glad you are with us. You know, 4th of July means a lot of things, right? It means fireworks, usually means getting together with the family, and it also means hot dogs. Coney Island, the Nathan's Famous hot dog eating contest. I watch it every year. I know a number of you watch it every year on ESPN. Let's talk to a man that has competed in that event several times, as a matter of fact, and he lives here in our own backyard. My friend Hall Hunt Jr., formerly of the Nathan's Famous hot dog eating contest, joins us here on 1010XL. Hall, how you doing?
I am doing well. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Hall, always appreciate the conversation, man, and you have done this. You lived in the world of competitive eating. Before we get into the contest and everything that goes with it, what is it like to be a competitive eater in the world that, Joey Chestnut has basically run now for almost a decade and a half?
Oh, man, it's been a while. I guess I kind of retired in 2009 once I got married and started having kids. But it was fun. I mean, basically every other weekend I'd go flying around to some city and just do like a 10-minute eating contest and get paid to go there and get put up in a nice place. So it was a fun life.
You know, that's what's interesting to me every year is people talk about this contest, and this is obviously the Super Bowl of competitive eating, the Nathan's Famous hot dog eating contest, but this is a year-round deal. I mean, this is these guys travel, these gals for that matter, travel around and do this every year. The only one that's televised, of course, is the hot dog one, but this is a full-time gig for some of these guys.
Yeah, I mean, back when I did it, 2004, 2009, something like that, I think I was ranked number 6th in the world. So usually like the top 10, you know, are the guys you see every single weekend. And like you said, there's countless of companies and different foods and competitions that go on year round. So yeah, usually you see the same top 10, you know, pretty much every other weekend. And then a couple other random people every now and then, but those were my core group that I used to hang out with.
Hall Hunt Jr., a former competitive eater and now an Ironman, and we'll get into that in a moment. It's a little bit of a life change for Hall Hunt Jr. here in the city of Jacksonville. Coney Island, Nathan's Famous. The contest every year, ESPN will come on at noon on Monday, and there will be thousands of people lined up for that thing. What is that like to take that stage in front of all of those people? I mean, it's really taken on a life of its own.
Yeah. I mean, I was always one to kind of, you know, just get in the zone and not even pay attention to things. But yeah, it was definitely a lot of fun. A lot of people there, a lot of energy. Yeah, it was a fun atmosphere.
Now, the guys that run the competitive eating circuit, the Shea brothers, right? And they do the introductions every year to the Coney Island Nathan's Famous hot dog eating contest. The introductions are hilarious. Every year that guy is hysterical when he introduces these contestants. I imagine they're pretty fun guys to hang out with.
Yeah, so George and Rich Shea, I think they started it back in like the late 90s, Major League Eating. They're the ones that put on all those contests. But yeah, like I said, the core group eaters and then those guys are pretty much traveling to everything. So we used to see each other and hang out all the time, and they had a lot of fun stories.
Hall Hunt Jr. here with us. Now, you competed against both Kobayashi and Joey Chestnut back when they were having a real rivalry. Obviously, that rivalry is gone now because, for whatever reason, Kobayashi just won't compete in the circuit that Joey Chestnut's in. But what is it like to go into a contest basically knowing that you have very little chance to win because you've got two guys that are, I mean, I guess they're human, but, I mean, can consume 70 hot dogs in 10 minutes. I mean, you know you're not going in there to win, right?
Well, I would always try. I mean, you never know what can happen on any given day. But, I mean, back then when I was doing it, when I first started training, Kobayashi was only doing, like, 40, I think. And the guy right before him was only one with, like, 25 hot dogs and buns. And I could do 40. Things have escalated, obviously, in the last decade here since then. So I don't know if I could have kept up or not. But my capacity was always there. I mean, when I did a milk gallon challenge for fun, I just kept going. And I did about 3.5 gallons of milk in about 4 minutes.
Oh, my gosh.
So I knew my capacity was there.
I have done the milk challenge on 3 different radio stations. It has never worked well for me. That is unbelievable. Yeah. You did 3.5 gallons of milk in 4 minutes?
Yeah, so basically just chugging it straight, and then I realized it wasn't going down in my stomach anymore. It just kind of stand right there in my throat. So I was like, all right, well, I guess that's my capacity right there. But when it came to Nathan's, I mean, those guys are just so fast. I guess I would be like a marathon runner of the eating, because I could only eat maybe at my top speed, you know, 4 or 5 hot dogs in a minute, where they could do like, you know, 15 just in the first minute.
You know, the one thing that's always – Well, there's a lot that amazes me about this contest, but the one thing that really strikes you is, by and large, most of the people that compete in the hot dog eating contest that we always watch on July 4th, all they're in pretty good shape. I mean, these are chestnuts in good shape. I mean, you have to be physically fit to do this or do it at a high level, and I imagine that surprises some people, the shape that these people are in.
Yeah, I mean, there's different theories out there. You know, some people think if you have too much fat, you know, around the belly, that it kind of constricts your stomach and doesn't allow it to expand, which I think makes sense. And then I've just always had two big passions. One is eating a lot, and one is exercising a lot. So for me, it just kind of worked.
Yeah, and for anybody that's seen you recently, I saw you, about a year ago. You are in fantastic shape as you're doing Spartan runs and Ironman challenges and whatnot. Training that goes into this, Hall. I guess that's part of it, working out, getting ready. But it's Friday right now. The contest is on Monday, 72 hours out. What are Joey Chestnut and these other contestants doing to get ready right now for Monday's contest?
Yeah, well, first off, disclosure, don't try this at home, kids. But yeah, typically what they're doing is, you know, chugging water and getting their stomach to stretch, and then just not eating a whole lot of food, if anything. I know I always trained with Joey, and, you know, we would do, you know, maybe like protein shakes or, you know, different things for our nutrients. But otherwise, we're just like, you know, chugging water once or twice a day, stretching our stomachs as much as we can to kind of get warmed up, and then just fasting until the contest otherwise.
Hall Hunt Jr., final moments. You mentioned you trained with Joey Chestnut. The guy is unbelievable. I think the record now is, what, like 75 hot dogs and buns in 10 minutes. I don't know who could do that in 10 days, much less 10 minutes. I mean, he's incredible. That'll probably never be topped. Yet he tries to top it every year himself. What makes him so dominant in this contest? I mean, it's insane how much more he can seemingly consume than his fellow contestants.
It's just like anything else, right? You got to have a lot of desire, you got to train a lot, and then you got to have those genetics. And I mean, I remember back in like 2004 or something like that, when I first met Joey, he and I were like just two college kids trying to get into the competitive eating scene, and he just has the natural ability. It's like he's got a giant jaw, which is kind of how he got his name, Joey Jaws Chestnut, and he can just swallow the hot dogs and buns whole pretty much. And then his frame is big. You know, you talk about like NFL football players for the draft. I'm a big Jags fan and season ticket holder, but they're looking for big frames, right, at the draft. Wide shoulders, wide hips, whatever. That's how he is built. So I think he's just got a lot more room for his stomach to expand too. But he trains like an animal. He has schedules set up. You know, he's doing something every single day for some kind of training, whether it's capacity or speed or something. So it's a lot of everything.
You know, when you started doing this in 2004, did you ever envision it becoming the event that it has? Obviously, ESPN has done wonders for it. But literally, whoever wins on Monday, they will come on the breaking news little sounder on ESPN and all the ESPN channels with the winner of the Nathan's Famous Hot Dog Eating Contest. It'll be all over ESPN.com. I mean, it has taken on a life of its own here over the years.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. I mean, I would try to promote as much as I could when I was in the sport, but I hardly watch it or keep up with it now. It just seems kind of crazy. It's kind of silly, but, you know, it's awesome. It's a lot of fun. So I don't know. I can't believe how big it's gotten, though. It's pretty funny.
All right, as we wrap up, I got to ask you something that's on everybody's mind that's listening to this conversation. You've probably been asked it a million times, so humor me. Your record was 40 hot dogs and buns in 10 minutes. We know that Chestnut's doing in excess of 70 hot dogs and buns. ESPN cameras fade to black. It's 2:00 in the afternoon, an hour after the contest. How are you feeling, and what's next for you in the coming hours?
Well, myself and all those guys at the finals in Coney, because of course you've got to win a qualifier to get there. You know, those are the best, and they're used to all that food. So after that, it's just hanging out. We would just go to the bars there right on the boardwalk at Coney Island and enjoy each other and hang out.
No stomach ailments the next morning, anything like that?
Not for me. I mean, things pass through kind of quickly, though, with all that grease in those hot dogs, but that's as far as I'll go.
Wow, it is just an amazing, amazing thing. And you've gone from eating 40 hot dogs and hot dog buns to now being in Ironman competitions and Spartan runs. Tell people what Hall Hunt Jr. is doing these days. By the way, you live right here in the Jacksonville area.
Yep, yeah, just in Fleming Island area. But yeah, I mean, like I was telling you before the call here, I can't ever decide, you know, what sport I want to do. In the last year or two, I've been doing a bunch of powerlifting with one of my firefighter buddies who got me actually to my PRs and all the bench press and squat and everything, even though I'm 40 now. And but I go back and forth doing that, and then Ironman and the Gate River Run and marathons and ultra marathon Spartans. And for those, you know, I'm not doing it year-round since I can't decide which sport to do, but I figure as long as I can be top 10% in those is kind of what I'm going for, because I just like competition, trying different things.
Well, that's pretty awesome. From a competitive eater, which, by the way, you were very successful at, as you mentioned, you were top 10 in the world at one point, to now the Ironman and the Spartan runs. Hall Hunt Jr., it's fascinating some of the things that you have done. Best of luck moving forward with all the things that you're involved with, man. Thank you for the time, and hopefully Coney Island on Monday, the Nathan's Famous Hot Dog Eating Contest, will once again give us a lot of memories, and maybe Joey Chestnut will break his own personal record. Hall, thank you, my friend. Have a great 4th of July.
Appreciate it, and go Jags.
There you go, Hall Hunt Jr. So I'm here at the MajorLeagueEating.com website where they rank the top 50 competitive eaters in the world. And so I click on Joey Chestnut. Everybody knows him from his hot dog records. Here are a couple other records for Joey Chestnut, who is obviously number one in the world, according to these rankings. He has the record for chicken wings, 182 chicken wings in 30 minutes. He has the record for pulled pork sandwiches, Denmark, 45 pulled pork sandwiches in 10 minutes. The record for tacos at Taco Bell, 53 soft tacos in 10 minutes. Ugh. Chicken wings, 61 buffalo wings in 12 minutes. 103 Crystal Burgers in 8 minutes for Joey Chestnut. These are all world records. 23.6-ounce meat pies in 10 minutes.
I'm a sausage guy.
Yeah. 55 glazed donuts for Chestnut in 8 minutes. 141 hard-boiled eggs in 8 minutes for Joey Chestnut. 12 pounds, 8 ounces of deep-fried asparagus in 10 minutes. 28-ounce corned beef sandwiches in 10 minutes. Almost 4.5 pounds of apple pie in 8 minutes. It just keeps going. This guy's insane. 6 pounds of funnel cake in 10 minutes. My personal favorite, I love a good jalapeno popper, Denmark. Joey Chestnut ate 118 jalapeno poppers in 10 minutes. 118 in 10 minutes.
There's no way I could eat one.
Oh, yeah, no, I could definitely eat one. I love spice. But yeah, I mean, look, the Nathan's Famous Hot Dog Eating Contest is the Super Bowl. No question about that. But you go to this website, it's fascinating, man. They travel around all over the country doing these things about once or twice a month, and we'll see. But there you go, Hall Hunt Jr. You go from competitive eating 40 hot dogs in 10 minutes at Coney Island, to now being a Spartan runner and being an Ironman. Pretty, pretty cool what Hall Hunt Jr. is doing these days. We are at halftime, 1 hour down, 1 hour to go. In the 9 o'clock hour, Daryl Sutherland, the head football coach at Bartram Trail High School. Certainly want to talk to him about Bartram Trail and Gator fans about your newest commitment in four-star corner Sharif Denson. We'll also wrap up our NFC West preview as we'll check in on the world champions. We'll go out to Los Angeles. Stu Jackson standing by. TheRams.com. Los Angeles looking to defend their Lombardi Trophy from a year ago. We're glad you're with us. A Friday night in Jacksonville. You got it on Hacker After Dark here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
After Dark on 1010XL.
9 o'clock hour has arrived. Glad you're with us, 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Hacker After Dark, leading into 4th of July weekend. Denmark, your plan for 4th of July. You were telling me there are some festivities that you're going to hit this weekend.
Yeah, me and Graham are going to do something Sunday. Monday, I'm golfing that morning. After that, I'll probably do something with fireworks, a couple buddies. I keep it chill. I don't do a whole lot. I like sitting in a chair by a pool, flip-flops, and just hanging out.
Could do a lot worse than that. I am heading over to historic Branford, Florida.
Oh, legendary.
I do love it over there. I'm not going to lie. I kid because I care. It's a lot of fun. My stepdad's got like 60 acres over there, very near the Suwannee River.
Any festivities over there?
Oh, there will be cold beer.
Redneck activities.
I don't know if I would go that far. Oh yeah, there's a tractor and there's a gator and there's probably going to be a bonfire or two. I think you could rest assured of that. I stopped by one of my favorite establishments, got some stogies that I'm taking over with me, so very excited about that. And then it's funny, I'll be in Branford, Florida tomorrow morning, and I'll be in New England next weekend. It'll be a 180 there from the Branford, Florida festivities to the Cornish, Maine festivities. Not exactly the same culture that I'm going to experience between tomorrow and then next Saturday when I'm up in New England for a couple of days. Couple of things to get into before we hit Darryl Sutherland, the head coach of Bartram Trail High School. Speaking of head coaches, we'll get more into this next week because I found it pretty interesting. Doug Peterson, obviously, the new Jaguar head coach. CBSSports.com did its rankings, 1 to 32, of the best coaches in the National Football League coming in to the 2022 season. And normally, when you see these lists have anything to do with the NFL or the Jaguars, you immediately scroll to the bottom, right? That's where all the Jaguars are. Players, it doesn't matter. They're going to be somewhere in the 27, 28, 29 range. So I click on this story from CBS Sports. I believe it came out yesterday. Ranking the coaches. And I look at the bottom five. Doug Peterson, nowhere to be found. I look at the next five. Doug Peterson, nowhere to be found. Now I'm into the 20s. Doug Peterson, nowhere to be found. Now I'm into the 16, 17 range. Still no Doug Peterson. I'm like, wow. I know he's got a Super Bowl, but normally Jacksonville doesn't get a lot of love in this regard. They ranked Doug Peterson 11th, the 11th best coach in the National Football League coming into this year. Now, it did not end well for him in Philadelphia. We all know that. I think we've all tended to focus more on the good times Doug Peterson had in Philadelphia as opposed to the bad times that Doug Peterson had in Philadelphia. But I love any time the Jaguars can get a little bit of love. And remember, not to bring up bad memories, but there were a lot of you, you know who you are, that wanted Byron Leftwich, that did not want Doug Peterson. Isn't it interesting, though, as the days have turned into weeks and the weeks have turned into months, how all of a sudden everybody seemingly is very excited about Doug Peterson. It's funny how that happened, isn't it? He'll obviously have to win some games before the here and now. I think Doug Peterson has won over this fan base this offseason. And we report a training camp. The Jaguars will be in training camp 3 weeks, if you can believe it, 3 weeks from Sunday is their report date, Sunday, July the 24th. Darryl Sutherland, the head coach of Bartram Trail High School, one of the best public school programs not only in the region but in the state. He just had a kid commit to Florida, Sharif Denson. We'll talk about Sharif. We'll talk about Bartram Trail. And we'll talk about St. Johns County, another high school opening up out there this year. Population in St. Johns is exploding. Will that have a bad effect on high school football out there? Will the talent be divvied up too much? All of that with Darryl Sutherland of Bartram Trail next on Hacker After Dark.
Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
Hello.
Another great guest on the Farrah and Farrah phone line. Brought to you by the accident attorneys at Farrah and Farrah.
Back here on 1010 XL at 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville. We are glad you are with us. The 1st of July, right around the corner. Good grief. Late June, early July. That means we are inside of 2 months for high school football season. High school football season that's going to look a little different than it has in years past. Let's talk to one of the guys that's the longest tenured coach in our area, been in over 2 decades in St. Johns County. That, of course, my friend Darrell Sutherland, the head coach of Bartram Trail. Coach, how we doing?
Doing great. Honored to be on. Thank you.
Hey, Coach, how was your off season? Obviously, another good year for you guys last year at Bartram. How's the off season gone to this point?
Well, it sounds like coach speak, but we don't ever call it the offseason. We started the preseason, so the day after we were eliminated, the preseason started. So, but it's been great. I tell you, it's a great group of young men. They are an absolute joy to coach. So they make it fun to go to work every day.
You know, St. Johns County, it's interesting, Coach. You had Tocoi Creek open last year. Beachside is opening this year. We know with you and St. Augustine and Nice, Ponte Vedra, Creekside, on down the line. St. Johns County population's exploding, but these different schools opening up, is that becoming more and more challenging, I guess, as the talent gets divvied up a little bit?
No, not really. The coaches that they've been able to hire in the new schools, they've been able to add great coaches into the county, and the level of football just continues to climb. Honestly, it really needed to happen. We had 200 guys in the program. We had 40 guys on our development squad last year weren't getting to play in regular games. They're playing in, inter-squad scrimmages. So just more opportunities for more student athletes to get involved. It's something that's needed to happen just as the county's growing so quickly.
The county is growing very, very quickly. And we talk about this every year, and we'll see how Tocoi Creek and how Beachside obviously end up. They're not on the same level as programs like you yet because they're so new. But whether it is you, Menendez, like I said, St. Aug, Creekside, we saw what Nice did last year. The caliber of football in St. Johns County in the northern part of the state, Coach, I think it's as good as you're going to find.
No, I agree with you. Obviously I'm biased, but we try and schedule the toughest competition we can schedule every week. And it's easy because they're all right around here. We're playing so many really high caliber football teams, and they're all right down the road. So it's exciting.
Darrell Sutherland, the head coach of Bartram Trail, here with us on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Coach, the FHSAA acted again this offseason. It seems like, well, they're changing things up a lot as of late. But now here we go. We mentioned St. Johns County. You are now a suburban county, which means you cannot play district games against Duval County. We know the battles you've had with Mandarin in the past, with Sandalwood in the past, in district play. That can no longer happen. As a guy that's been around this game for so long like you, how did you view the whole metro suburban thing, and how do you view it moving forward?
You know, the way that we look at it, it kind of forced us to put into practice the things we tell the guys all the time, as far as, focus on the things that we can control. And I kind of, I joked about it, but I asked your idea. I was like, wait, so they're still letting us keep our equipment. We still get to schedule 10 regular season games. There's still a playoffs. All right, then I'm good. We were still able to, even though they're not district games anymore, we're playing Mandarin, we're playing some other teams that are Metro or whatever. We're still getting to play against great competition and getting to line up every Friday night and go get after it. So, that's the part that we're going to focus on.
I'm curious, coming from a guy like you, because you guys make deep runs in the state playoffs seemingly every year. The argument I've heard why people don't like it is there going to be a definite state champion? When you have 8A, but you have 8A Metro and 8A Suburban, is there really going to be a state champion at year's end? Is that something you have even thought about, or is that just for other people to give thoughts to?
Not really. In 4A, Suburban and Metro, you've got a really pretty good division of perennial state champions, with Venice and Lakeland and some of those that are in ours and some of those that are in the other. It would be fun just after the state championship games to go find a field somewhere and settle it, you know, I think the competition level is going to be so great. It'll be a tremendous accomplishment to get to that point in either division.
I talked to Verlin Dormany earlier this offseason. He's been at Trinity 30-plus years. You've been at Bartram 20-plus years. I want to say you two are the longest tenured guys still active at your respective schools. Coach, we've seen 32 head coaching changes in the Northeast Florida, Southeast Georgia area in the last two off seasons. A guy like you that has been at your school, a public school, mind you, for 20-plus years, what's your thought on the amount of coaching turnover that we've had here as of late?
You know, it's a tough thing just because there are so many pulls and there's so many other, you know, things that go just outside of the coaching and so many time demands it makes it tough to balance being able to really get, you know, give your all into coaching and doing the best job you can and really trying to provide the best experience you can for your student athletes and also trying to be a great husband and a great father and being involved in your community. And it definitely stretches you quite a bit. You know, I think in those changes that you've seen, we've added some really good coaches in the county. You know, I've been really blessed that I've been able to keep so much of the same staff together. I think that's a huge part of it is that I have so many guys on our staff that do so much of the work and that, you know, if it were just one of us trying to do it all, it would be tough. And so I know how blessed I am to have such a great group of guys that I get to work with.
Well, I think it's a testament too to Verlin and to yourself for the longevity, for you guys continuing year after year after year to give yourself to these programs and help these young men develop these young men. It's a fantastic thing. A couple of more here for Daryl Sutherland, the head coach of Bartram Trail. Coach, what about this season? I got to ask you about Sharif here in a moment. Of course, Gator fans got some good news earlier this week. Before we get there, the team as a whole, how do they look coming into 2022?
I am really excited about this bunch. Very team-centered, very hardworking, super coachable. You know, just so some of the things that we've gone through in the spring and the challenges we keep as a coaching staff, and then also our players' leadership council, keep, you know, what's the next thing we can do to try and ratchet it up and demand a little bit more without demanding more time, just demand more while we're there. They keep rising up to whatever the bar is that we put there. And I think we've got a chance to be pretty good.
I got to ask you about Sharif Denson. He commits to Florida in the last couple of days, an Under Armour All-American consensus, one of the top 300 players in the country, according to 247sports.com. He will join Trevez Johnson, another one of your former players that went down to Gainesville a couple of years ago. Coach, what are Gator fans, what do they need to know? What are they getting in a player like Sharif Denson?
Well, he is a fantastic football player and an even better young man. And that's one of the things that we were able to tell the Florida staff is that, you know, very much like Trevez, he's a guy that's going to make your whole campus better, you know, he's a leader. We've asked a lot of Sharif this year is from a leadership standpoint, even just kind of a cool thing with our players council. I had Sharif and Dominic Armayo, our center, our two captains, our offense and our defensive captain. And I taught them the leadership lesson on Monday, and then I had them teach it to the players council group, the leadership group on Thursday, and really got, you know, had to get out of their comfort zone and teach the lesson. And you know, just some of the things that we've asked of him, it never balks at it. It's always like, yes, sir. And wants the challenge, not only from a football standpoint, but from a leadership standpoint. So they're getting a great football player, a great young man. And like I say, he's going to be a guy that's going to be a leader on campus too.
Gator fans are certainly fired up about Sharif's commitment earlier this week. There is no question about that. Daryl Sutherland of Bartram Trail. Coach, this will be our 16th year under the Friday Nights with the postgame show. You have been a big, big part of every one of them. I have no doubt we'll be talking to you a lot this upcoming season. Thank you as always. We'll do it again soon.
Hey, thanks so much. God bless.
There you go, Daryl Sutherland of Bartram Trail. And yeah, that county, St. John's County, we seemingly say it every year for those of you that follow high school football, whether it's St. Augustine, Creekside. I mean, you look at Brian Braddock, the coach at St. Augustine, Sean McIntyre, the coach at Creekside. We obviously just talked to Daryl Sutherland of Bartram Trail. Teams like Menendez, look at what Nice did last year. Colin Drafts, their head coach. They got a young man at quarterback in Marcus Stokes that was just at the Elite 11 camp, one of the best quarterbacks in the country, currently committed to Penn State. It is a crazy good county for high school football. And as we said with Coach Sutherland there, the Friday Night Lights postgame next month will be year 16 for us. In fact, today's July 1st, 1 month from today will be the high school football media day as we are on the doorstep of the 2022 high school football season. Coming up in just a moment, we'll wrap up our NFC West preview. We've already been to Arizona. We've already been to San Francisco. We've already been to Seattle. Tonight, we'll wrap it up with the world champion, LA Rams, as we will head to LA and talk to staff writer for the Rams.com, Stu Jackson. Interesting offseason, right, for the Rams. They give Aaron Donald enormous money. They give Cooper Kupp enormous money. They bring in Allen Robinson, yet they lose Von Miller. They, to this point, have not re-signed Odell Beckham Jr. Darius Williams is now in Jacksonville. So there were some defections off of the world champions. We'll be very, very interested to see what happens with them here in 2022. Of course, the big sports stories of the week, they will continue to be the big sports stories probably for the foreseeable future. USC and UCLA moving from the Pac-12 to the Big Ten. That is a done deal. They will both start in the Big Ten in 2024. The question now, rumors about Oregon, rumors about Washington. Who else from the Pac-12 may make the same jump to the Big Ten? What about the ACC? What, if anything, can they do to not be picked off like the Big 12 was with Texas and Oklahoma, like the Pac-12 was with USC and UCLA? So certainly that story will continue to fester, you would have to think, over the 4th of July weekend coming back next week. And the NBA offseason, the money being dished out is insane. Absolutely insane. $251 million for Bradley Beal in Washington. $215 million for Zach LaVine in Chicago. How about $214 million for Devin Booker in Phoenix? If you're an NFL player and you see the contracts these guys are getting, whoo! Now, again, NBA season's a lot longer. They play 82 games. They start basically with training camp in mid to late September. And if you make the playoffs, you're playing pretty consistently through May and June. But my goodness, the difference in salary between the NBA and between the NFL, absolutely, absolutely night and day. And these contracts are just huge all over the place. And we'll see. Look, the big news of the NBA isn't necessarily even the contracts. That's part of it. But remember, Kevin Durant's still floating out there. Kevin Durant still requested that trade. Will Kevin Durant be a Brooklyn Net by the time we reconvene on Tuesday? Or will he be a Philadelphia 76er? Will he be a member of the Miami Heat? The Phoenix Suns have been linked to Kevin Durant. So obviously that is the overwhelming story in the NBA. Free agency and the money being dished out is a part of it. As I told you guys last night as well, I did want to mention this. Again, just briefly, humor me here, if you will, on Hacker After Dark. Wimbledon ongoing. The American men still doing very, very well. I think there's six guys that are left, six American males left out of the 24 men remaining in the Wimbledon draw. Francis Tiafoe makes it to the round of 16 today as they're trying to rebuild, right? It won't be McEnroe and Connors and Sampras and Agassi. I'm not saying that. But do you realize it has been 19 years since an American man won a Grand Slam? And that was Andy Roddick at the 2003 U.S. Open. That is a long, long drought. And, of course, Roger Federer, Rafael Nadal, Novak Djokovic have had everything to do with that. The three best players probably in the history of the game have all three played over the last two decades. But Roger Federer is now 41. Who knows if he'll play again? Djokovic and Nadal still very dominant. Both are getting into their mid to upper 30s. Who knows how much longer they are going to go? There's about to be an opening again. And can we see men's tennis in this country kind of make a comeback. Look, it wasn't uber popular, but back when Sampras was winning and Agassi was winning and Connors and McEnroe were doing their thing, Michael Chang, people cared about American tennis, American men's tennis. Not so much anymore. As a tennis fan myself, I hope that changes, and maybe this is the beginning of that with such a strong showing by these American men out there at the All England Club at Wimbledon. All right, let's head to the West Coast. Los Angeles, California. Stu Jackson, staff writer, therams.com. As our NFC West preview wraps, where are the Rams in that division? Their biggest challenger is probably San Francisco. Seattle looks like they're in a rebuild. Who knows about Arizona? With DeAndre Hopkins being suspended for the first six games, Kyler Murray doesn't appear happy with his contract. It appears on the surface to be a relatively easy division for the Rams. Is that what they're thinking out there? Stu Jackson, therams.com is next. It's Hacker After Dark on a Friday night, and we are certainly glad you are with us heading in to a 4th of July weekend with Dylan Denmark, the Hacker Ryan Green with you here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
It's Friday. I heard that.
Hello.
Another great guest on the Farrah and Farrah phone line. Brought to you by the accident attorneys at Farrah and Farrah.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville. It is a Thursday evening, and we are glad you are with us. The NFC West is where we have been all week long. We have been to Arizona already. We have already been to Seattle. Tomorrow night, it'll be about San Francisco. As far as tonight, let's check in on the world champions in Los Angeles. For that, Stu Jackson, staff writer for therams.com, always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL. Stu, how you doing?
Ryan, I'm doing fantastic this morning. How about yourself?
Hey, Stu, we are good, man. Thank you for the time. And before we look back on the offseason, obviously it ended with the Lombardi Trophy there in February. What was the reaction in that city in the weeks and months that followed the Rams bringing home a Super Bowl championship?
I got to tell you, Ryan, it was just really special. I mean, it was a goal, you know, at the beginning of the season, you know, organizationally to go out and win LA's Super Bowl, if you will, with it being played at SoFi Stadium, and of course. So just to see the reaction, you know, throughout LA and, of course, the greater LA area, it was really, really cool. You know, obviously it's the franchise's first Super Bowl victory or Super Bowl win, if you will, in the city of LA. So that only made it even more unique and amazing. So just a really incredible experience, and just so fun to see all the fans' reactions and you know, as how they took it all in.
Not that the city hadn't embraced both the Rams and the Chargers, but when a Super Bowl championship like that comes about, I mean, is the city now full-blown, you know, Rams fever after that?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that you've got, you know, a team that, again, when you win the Super Bowl at home, especially in your home stadium, I think that only that does nothing but help, I would say, as far as just, you know, trying to you know, capture as many fans as you can, you know, in LA that, you know, maybe weren't already, you know, generationally you know, fans from back when the you know, team was in the city the first time. So you know, certainly, you know, when you win the Super Bowl at home and you're able to accomplish something like that, you can definitely see the ripple effect it has throughout the city of LA.
Stu Jackson is a staff writer for therams.com. He's with us here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville. Matt Stafford, after 12 years in Detroit, comes out to LA and in 1 year changes his entire persona as an NFL quarterback. Stu, what's the expectation for him now? Now that we've kind of put last year to bed, now that you moved on to 2022, Stafford was great in the playoffs last year. Is that the expectation, to see the Matt Stafford back from the playoffs now in 2022?
Yeah, I think that's safe to assume. I mean, look, he's got high standards for himself, and so I'm sure he would tell you, you know, the exact same thing. You know, he tied his career high for passing touchdowns in a single season with 41 last year. And of course, you know, played great in the playoffs, leading three straight game winning drives, which included, of course, the clincher in the Super Bowl. So, I think that's definitely the standard that he's going to hold himself to. I know he's talked a lot about this offseason, just trying to take more ownership of the offense in terms of just, you know, being on top of and knowing what they're trying to do as it evolves, but also being able to teach that to other players, whether it's younger guys or some of the new players they've signed, like wide receiver Allen Robinson. So collectively, like I said, I think he would be also the first to tell you that, you know, that's the standard he has for himself, and he's going to try to meet or perhaps exceed it.
You mentioned the Allen Robinson acquisition, Stu. How has the offensive dynamic changed? We still don't know about Odell Beckham. He's still a free agent, right? I mean, obviously Cooper Kupp got a huge deal. Allen Robinson comes in. Robert Woods, after his injury, traded to Tennessee. So a fair amount of movement in that Rams wide receiver room. But now that it's landed apparently on Kupp and Robinson, how is that combo, you think, the expectation for them moving forward?
I think it's going to be a combo that's really exciting to watch, because I remember earlier in the offseason program when Liam Coen, the Rams' new offensive coordinator, was talking about all the different things that Allen Robinson can do. He made a point to bring up that he can actually run a lot of the same routes and do a lot of the same things that Kupp can do. And so, obviously, Kupp is coming off of the triple crown winning season he had last year, leading the league in catches, receiving yards, and receiving touchdowns. But when you have two players who have that kind of versatility as far as being able to run the entire route tree and things like that, that's something that can certainly cause lots of matchup problems for opposing secondaries and opposing defenses. So I'm really fascinated to see how that develops and how that plays out, because obviously, you know, if Allen can do a lot of the same things Cooper can, then that gives you a lot of flexibility with, you know, potentially where you might, line both of them up. So I'm looking forward to seeing, how his role emerges and develops and what kinds of things he does this season.
Stu Jackson, staff writer for therams.com, here with us on 1010XL and on 92.5 FM. Cam Akers in the backfield. Boy, that return last year, nothing short of miraculous. What, about five and a half months from an Achilles injury to actually participate late in that Super Bowl run? How has Cam Akers looked this offseason, and do you feel that he will be 100% when the season starts?
He's looked great, and I would say that that would be the expectation as far as, you know, being 100%. You know, it's interesting because he was talking, I think it was at the beginning of the off-season program maybe, or an exit interview. Either way, it was earlier this off-season. And he said that he felt like he didn't play at the level he possibly could have, or he basically wasn't satisfied with his performance in the five games that he played, or across the five games he played last year, which, like you mentioned, to be saying that when you're coming off of, you know, returning from a torn Achilles in, you know, 5.5-6 months, like within the same season effectively, like that's just, it's pretty hard to believe, but it just tells you the kind of work ethic that he has. So, if with him being 100%, and him looking good, and, at least from, what was seen in the open off-season or organized team activity sessions that we all got to watch, it should be an exciting season for him.
Stu, defensively, obviously the big story of the offseason was Aaron Donald. There was, I guess, some question as to whether he was going to come back and play in the NFL. He had even hinted at the idea that if he had to retire, he was at peace with it. And then lo and behold, he becomes one of the highest paid defensive players in the history of the league. How much of a relief was it to the organization to get Aaron Donald signed and back into the fold?
There's no question. It was a really, really big deal to have him back, have him returning. You just think about, I mean, even if you're a casual fan who watches, an occasional Rams game here and there and just watch what they do defensively. You know who Aaron Donald is, and you know the kind of impact he has as far as, you know, the double and triple teams he commands from opposing offensive lines, I should say. And not only that, but just the impact that has in terms of what the Rams can do defensively or are able to do defensively. And, you know, if you don't have somebody like that in the fold, or, you know, if the Rams don't have someone like that, or don't have him specifically, I should say, that definitely changes, you know, the way you, you know, probably approach things defensively, obviously, given the impact he can have on a game. So no question, having Aaron Donald back was a big deal, and certainly something that also will be really, really big for the upcoming season.
You lose Von Miller, I guess. He came over and was a big part of that run to a Super Bowl, but then he ultimately ends up in Buffalo. Was that a surprise that Miller was only there for, what, 2 months and then moved on?
Yeah, I mean, I know that, you know, Rams general manager Les Snead, you know, publicly, you know, leading into the start of free agency, or as it was approaching, or maybe it was after, but so at one point he had said that, you know, he had been public and he had been vocal about, yeah, you know, we'd love to bring it back if we can. And, you know, when obviously that didn't pan out, that's kind of what led them, he said, to pivoting to signing Allen Robinson. So a little bit of a surprise, but that being said, certainly doesn't minimize the impact that he had when he was here in Los Angeles. And certainly I'm sure he's going to have a similar impact on the Bills defense as well, just as far as what he's going to be able to you know, teach those guys and how he'll be able to help their pass rush.
Our NFC West preview continues. We're out in Los Angeles tonight. Stu Jackson, staff writer for the Rams.com. Stu, when you look at the NFC as a whole, we'll get back to the division in one moment, but Devontae Adams is out of Green Bay. Gronk retires in Tampa, at least for now. We'll see what happens in a month or so. But the NFC as a whole, look, it appears to be the Rams at the top very much again. I mean, is the expectation in Los Angeles that they should indeed be in contention, not just for the division, but to represent the NFC again in the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I think if you heard Rams head coach Sean McVay at any point this offseason, at least in the earlier stages, you know, he always talked about, you know, running it back. And certainly anybody who, you know, wins the Super Bowl, that's always going to be the goal the next season, whether, you know, you're representing the NFC or the AFC. So, yeah, I think it's fair to say that that's certainly the expectation. And, you know, I can understand why that would also be the case externally as well, because, you know, when you look at who the Rams have signed between not only Robinson, but also former Seahawks linebacker Bobby Wagner as well, and just with a lot of the talent that they have still returning from last year's roster, you know, there's no reason, I think, why they shouldn't be in contention to represent the NFC again and win it and get back to the Super Bowl.
Stu, what is the thought on the division as we start to wrap up here with you? From the outside looking in, appears Seattle's in a rebuild. Arizona, who knows? Hopkins is out for the first 6 weeks. San Francisco looks good, but the Rams were clearly better than them in the NFC title game. I mean, is it the Rams world and everybody is just living in it in the NFC West right now?
I'll say this. You can never count out any team, and then if any other team in the NFC West, no matter what their roster or current situation looks like. I mean, I'm entering what will be my fourth season, you know, with the team, covering the team this fall. And every year, no matter what, if it's been a key player injured or somebody else has been injured, those games are always competitive, always down to the wire. And so while I can understand that perception or why that might look that way, it certainly, at least for me, like I'm not counting out or underestimating any of the other teams.
Hey, Stu, make sure you tell Jalen Ramsey hello from all of us here in Jacksonville. He's certainly fondly thought of in these parts.
Sounds good.
Thanks, Stu. Appreciate you, man.
All right. Thank you.
Well, there you go. Stu Jackson of the Rams.com. As that wraps up our NFC West preview for the week, we made stops in Arizona. We made stops in Seattle, San Francisco. And, of course, tonight checked in on the world champion Los Angeles Rams. It appears to be their division. Seattle appears to be in a rebuild. Who really knows about Arizona with DeAndre Hopkins suspended for the first 6 weeks, Kyler Murray currently unhappy with his contract status, and San Francisco, again, they got questions, man, whether Debo Samuel is truly happy. What's going on with Trey Lance at quarterback? Will Jimmy Garoppolo still be on the roster? So I like the Rams, obviously, going in, But there are some good teams out there. It'll be interesting to watch and see how the NFC West takes shape here in 2022. Well, that'll wrap it up. Not just for a Friday night, but for the week here on Hacker After Dark. We got a lot of people to thank for this evening's festivities. Again, Stu Jackson, who you just heard, staff writer for the Rams.com. You also heard from Vinny Iyer, my friend from the Sporting News, has covered the NFL for many, many years. He gave us his thoughts on the Jaguar off season. Hall Hunt, what a great, great interview that was. A guy that has competed at Coney Island at the Nathan's Famous Hot Dog Eating Contest. 40 was the biggest number he ever had there. He talked about training with Joey Chestnut back in the day. Of course, that'll go on Monday on ESPN there at Coney Island with the Nathan's Famous Hot Dog Eating Contest. And then Daryl Sutherland of Bartram Trail High School, one of the best high school coaches, not only in the area, but in the entire state of Florida. And, of course, he just had a young man, Sharif Denson, the defensive back from Bartram, commit to Billy Napier and the University of Florida earlier this week. That'll do it for the week on Hacker After Dark. Jacksonville, thank you for hanging out with us all week long, and have an absolutely terrific 4th of July weekend. I'm heading down to the Suwannee River area over the next couple of days. Going to hang out with family. Going to enjoy some libations, certainly, and just celebrate our nation's independence. Hope you guys do the same. Be safe out there. But most importantly, have a terrific 4th of July. And we will be back Tuesday. We're off Monday, of course. Back Tuesday on Hacker After Dark. And we hope you join us then. Dylan Denmark was your producer tonight. I'm the Hacker, Ryan Green. Again, Jacksonville, thank you for hanging out with us all week long. For all of us, not only on Hacker After Dark, but for all of us here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM, happy 4th of July, everybody. And we will talk to you Tuesday here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.